Hello, Lois. This is Mike. I'm the personnel director here at your husband's work.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you?
Fine.
Lois, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I have some bad news.
What do you mean, bad news? Bob's okay, isn't he?
Well, actually, that's why I called to talk to you. It's about Bob, and I know that he's been an employee here for a very long time, but I'm afraid we're going to have to let Bob go.
What do you mean? Wait, that's not very fair. He's been very loyal to you.
Look, I can understand you feeling that way.
You don't understand. We just had a baby.
No, I understand that.
This is a very hard time to do this kind of a thing.
Yes, it is, but Bob has kind of forced our hand on this.
Why are you firing him?
We caught him doing his secretary on his office desk.
Oh, that son of a bitch!
Look, I know you're upset.
Upset is not the word. That stupid, rotten son of a bitch. I can't believe this.
He's on his way home right now, and when he's going to need your support.
Support my ass! I'm going to change the locks on the door. I'm throwing his outside on the front lawn. He can just have it all. I'm not even going to be here when he gets back. And now, I don't feel so bad about his brother.
Lois.
Casey and Ron. It's a joke. Your husband puts up your birthday.
For the most entertaining talk anywhere, stay tuned to LA Talk Radio. Your real talk station. Your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
According to a study by the Josephson Institute, 64% of high school students admit they cheated on a test in the past year. 42% said they'd lied to save money, while 30% claimed to have stolen from a store. And 100% of those lying, cheating, thieving hooligans also admitted to listening to
"One and Only" seems to be the phrase that pays as Backtime remembers the events that called December 2nd home.
I hurt myself.
Today in 1901, men became just a little less likely to do themselves bodily harm each morning as Gillette patented the first disposable razor.
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees.
On this day in 1967, the Monkees became the first and so far only musical act to score 4 number one albums in a one-year span. And today in 1969, the Boeing 747 made its inaugural flight from Seattle to New York City. That's back time on December 2nd. This is your announcer speaking.
A childless couple is seriously thinking about abducting. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Fran and Tom Parsons have been unable to have a child by natural means and now say they are seriously discussing abduction. The Parsons, who have long desired to have a child of their own, say they just don't have the patience to deal with all the red tape that comes with legal adoption. Expectant father-to-be, Tom Parsons.
It isn't going to be ours, but, we're gonna love it from the moment we make off with the stroller.
The Parsons told reporters that they are really hoping for a little baby boy, but will be perfectly happy if it has 10 fingers, 10 toes, and is easy to disguise as a bag of laundry. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Yes, we're sure that swimsuit style is all the rage on the beaches of Bulgaria. But here in North America, we prefer to keep our private parts private.
We can tell what your religion is.
Thank you, Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer, for when you come out of the surf, you alert the rest of us beachgoers as to just how frigid the water is.
Your Audi is now an innie.
Why would you want to accentuate shrinkage?
Someone hand that man a towel, yeah.
Your tacky trunks go by many names. Banana hammock, grape smuggler, torpedo tube, and man sock. But they all equally display the inadequacies of Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer, a real American hero.
Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Close your eyes, kids. Here he comes again.
And now from high atop the LA Talk Radio building, it's time for Sam and Susie in the Morning. Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to an overcast day in Los Angeles.
Hi.
It is December 2nd and Susie's ready to go.
Not really.
No.
I'm overhung this morning.
Yeah. You're wearing a Chicago cap.
It's actually Cincinnati.
Oh, it is.
But close.
Shows you how much I know.
Actually,
isn't that C used for Chicago too?
Or maybe Cubs or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, the Cubs, I think.
But this is a Cincinnati hat.
It is?
Yes. It's actually funny. The owner of this hat, one of my boys.
One of them?
One of my men. He actually gets very mad at me because I refuse to acknowledge that it's a Cincinnati hat in his presence.
Yeah.
And so I always walk around. I'm like, nice hat. Is that Chicago? And he's always like, no, it's fucking Cincinnati.
Really? So you made the mistake too?
I made the mistake, but now okay. I just do it purposely to annoy him.
I see.
So it's funny that you actually just did the same thing.
I know.
Oh, well, it just
yeah,
doesn't
what do I know
it.
About baseball? I don't know anything.
I think it's football.
You're in a baseball hat.
Baseball hat, football yeah. hat, they're all the same. I don't know. I don't even know what sport it is. Never mind. I hate sports.
Okay, it's that C with a little point on the left, whatever it is. But
I don't know.
Anyway, what the hell do we know about sports? So how's it going this morning?
Interesting.
Yeah, you all bundled up in a sweater and everything. You cold?
It's cold and nasty out.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man, getting out of bed this morning was very difficult.
Why is that?
Because I didn't get home until like 3:30 in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened until 3:30?
Well, I was simply knitting, minding my own business.
You were knitting?
I was knitting, yes, yeah. At Craft Club. what?
Where do you find time to go knitting?
Well, it starts
in your busy life.
School gets out at 10, and so at 10 I went over to Craft Club.
And it's open at that time?
It's at a friend's house.
Oh, I see. Okay.
People just kind of come and go. It's every other Monday night we have it.
It was like a mommy and me or something.
No. It's basically me and like 40 of my closest cycling friends, and we just get drunk and stoned and do crafts.
I see. Okay.
And since
so
I'm
you
not,
were drunk and you did crafts?
Yes, yes.
You were knitting?
People
okay.
are painting and drawing on the walls and, you know, mm-hmm. doing all kinds of fun things.
That's some fucking wild class you've got there.
Oh, no, this isn't class. This is Craft Club.
Oh, I'm sorry, with the bike riders.
With the bike riders.
Why am I thinking it's from... Okay, because you guys have the study groups and everything.
Yes, those are pretty wild, too.
Yeah, I'm used to going after school and doing all that shit, you know?
I do all kinds of things.
I can't keep up with you.
I can't keep up with me either.
Okay, so you
I need
knitting.
A stunt double.
I know, to help you get all fucked up all the time.
How great would that be if I had a stunt double and, like, my normal self, I could just go and, like, sleep and just kind of, I don't know, work on my beauty rest or whatever, and then I could have, like, my doppelganger, you know, go out and just kind of do all the crazy things that Susie does. And that would be that.
Yeah, but your life would be boring then.
Yeah, it kind of would be. Then I wouldn't have anything to talk about with you.
Yeah, like sticking fingers up assholes.
Oh, my God. All right, people that are just tuning in are going to wonder about that one.
Yeah, well, we'll play the previously on Sam and Susie in a little bit, and you guys can hear if you missed yesterday's show, Susie's story.
So tell me the feedback you've been getting on that.
Well, I got some feedback from Greg Rempe. Mm-hmm. He does a barbecue show, and he said his whole office were rolling on the fucking floor with
no.
a story about the finger up the ass in a nightclub. Only you could come up with stories like this, Susie. It didn't even happen to you.
That's I don't make this stuff up, though. That's the best part.
I know.
Like, it really all happens. Oh, man. And now, just imagine if I could actually remember everything that did happen to me if I wasn't blacked out half the time.
I know. Then you'd really have some stories.
Then imagine the things I'd have to say.
I know.
Oh, fuck.
So going back to the knitting, what happened then?
Oh, well, so last night, basically, Well, first of all, I skipped statistics class yesterday.
You did.
To go kind of on a date with Lane.
Mm-hmm. Whom you picked up at the airport.
Whom
earlier,
I picked
right?
up at the airport, yes.
And remind us who Lane is?
Lane is the boy from my biology class who took me on the first date to the penthouse party.
That's right. Okay.
Yes, yes.
All right.
So I picked Lane up at the airport, and then we went back to his house, and we watched a movie. We watched Sideways, and then I decided that having a makeout sesh with him was more important than going to stats class.
Uh-huh.
Simply because... I don't understand stats anyway. If I go to fucking class, I'm not going to understand it. I'm going to sit there and, like, want to kill the professor and just have dreams of breaking his kneecaps. Therefore, I'm not fucking going to class anymore. Yeah. I'm going to fail. I don't care.
So you've given up on that?
I think I've given up.
Really?
Yep.
Why don't you get some, like, help? You know, I mean, not necessarily a tutor.
I'm paying $200 a week for a tutor. I go to the math lab. I try and study. The professor's just a communist douchebag.
But you know what I used to do in college? I would just go to the bookstore and find some books that explain this shit other than the textbook, you know? And sometimes it makes it a lot easier. You know,
no.
I hate to hear you giving up on it because you're just going to have to take it over.
I think I'll actually understand it the second time, though.
Come on, that's a fucking excuse to procrastinate. You still have a chance, don't you?
I have a 70.6 in the class right now.
So that's a C?
That's a C.
That's a C. Okay, well, if you can maintain it, at least you're going to fucking pass. I mean,
there's no way I will, no matter how much I study, and the professor admits this too. You know, he's like, no matter how much you study, he's like, if you're not like, you know, if you don't have a proclivity for, you know, statistics and math, you're just not going to do well no matter how much you study. And
really?
He actually tells us this.
Really?
Yep.
What an
He's
asshole.
Like, either you get it or you don't. And either you're smart in stats or you're not. He's like, everyone has their talent. And he's like, Susie, he doesn't say it specifically to me, but to most of the people in the class.
How is it that mostly assholes end up as teachers, you know? I mean, even my kids' schools and shit. I mean, the shit the teachers do and say.
Oh, I know.
You know, and especially in college. I mean, this is fucking bullshit. You know, where's the motivation there? Where's the encouragement?
Exactly.
You know?
I mean,
it's
like,
not
normally,
just about the material, you know, but that's what a lot of college professors don't understand. They just like, you know, are cold to you. You know, they don't really give a shit. They just come in. They make it like very sterile.
Yep.
And they leave.
And this guy, I mean, he's such a, I mean, it's not black and white. I mean, like, who really cares about this shit and like the test statistic? And I mean, I understand the basic premise of it all.
Right.
But I mean, it's just like the technical nitty gritty of this shit, and he makes it so goddamn difficult.
I know, and so, all these equations and shit. Right?
I want to shove something up his ass, actually. I do, and not just my finger.
Yeah, a fucking broomstick or
God
something.
God damn it, a fucking broomstick! I want to shove it up his ass.
Yeah, well, an asshole like that might actually like it.
Oh God, I'm telling you, like no one's ever made me like so angry in my life, and he's got this like shit-eating grin on his face at all times. He's just like, with pleasure, with pleasure, I give you F.
You really?
Ugh.
It's going to fuck up your GPA, too. You know?
Well, that's why I, you know, it doesn't matter. Say I do get a C, that's going to fuck up my GPA anyway, because I have straight A's and everything else in my life. Mm-hmm. So I might as well try and take it again with a different teacher, you know, that at least has a heart.
No, that's true. That's true. But you're still going to have an F on your record.
Well, when you take the class again, you know, it definitely, the F doesn't affect your GPA as much anymore.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The new grade will replace it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's the whole point of like having to take it again. And now that I'm postponing UCLA for another year, I kind of don't really have that much pressure.
That's true, yeah. And plus, I think the best thing to do when you have a situation like that is just wait and take another professor. I agree with you.
So,
you know,
I don't know. That's. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to specifically try and fail, and I am going to study, and I am going to go to study groups and things like that. But I've kind of... Normally, I get so... sorry. Chain smoking yesterday.
Oh, another vice.
God damn. Well, it's a little bit stressful. Okay? Trying, like, I'm a perfectionist when it comes to, like, my work and things like that. And so it's very, very difficult for me, like, emotionally to accept that I'm actually studying and trying for something and it's not, you know, working out for me.
Right.
So... Sorry. I don't know. I'm acting out, Sam. I'm acting out. That's why I drink. That and it's for the kids.
I know. You always have reasons to drink, you know?
Lisa sent me a text message this morning. I was lying in my bed and she was upstairs in her bed and she's like, nice jazz. Like who are you listening to? I'm like, I don't know. You know, some radio station. And then I was like, oh, I can't get out of bed. And she's like, why? And I was like, because I'm really hungover. She's like, I have no sympathy for you being hungover. And I was like, fuck you. You don't know what I had to deal with last night. you know, and besides, I only drank last night because I had to, you know, meet up with the Franz and deal with that whole situation.
Oh,
and,
well, I can understand that. That must have been stressful.
Oh, God. It really was. And then...
okay, but let's just agree that you don't have to give excuses for drinking. We already know you drink, so it doesn't matter why you drink, right?
I can give any excuse I want.
Okay. All right, well, you know, I mean, but we're not interested.
It's for the kids. I'm maintaining it's for the children.
Yeah, okay. With the wine corks and shit?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. You All should right. see how many I have.
Really?
Actually, I thought a brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to stop saving the kids. And I'm going to actually soundproof the entire studio in wine corks.
With corks.
How brilliant would that be?
Oh, God. I'm sure you have enough to cover a whole
fucking
wall, huh?
I have enough to cover this wall.
Really?
That could actually be really
beautiful.
But
I mean, if you're helping kids by donating these corks and shit, why are they still at your house? I mean, they're not doing those kids any good.
They don't want you to just send in a couple at a time. They want you to send in like,
right,
a substantial amount.
Right, but you just said
you
have a substantial amount. So send it in.
I am sending it. I am
okay,
going to send it
help
in.
Help the kids.
Helping the kids. Shut up. Anyway.
Yeah. So,
what, enough about me. What about you?
Well, wait a minute. We didn't even get started here.
Oh, I know. I know.
Yeah. So you met up
so
with Lane.
So we met an author today.
Yeah. Well, if you don't feel like talking, we
can
go home.
No, I do.
I'm kidding.
I didn't feel like getting out of bed this morning. I was going to try and do a remote show, but I was like, Sam will kill me.
You're not doing no fucking remote shows.
You're not doing no fucking remote show.
You That's right. Fuck you.
You sounded like an Italian mobster, like
really?
When you just said that.
Okay, well, I know. I have all kinds of fucking accents and shit. That's fine, though. I mean,
oh,
that's
I know.
What
it's
makes
wonderful.
It different, you know?
I try and do accents, too, but like my Israeli accent comes out as like a French douchebag.
Israeli
and
accents.
What? What's so funny about that?
Israeli accent. You know, who the fuck can do Israeli accent, you know?
Who the fuck can do Israeli accent?
Yeah,
like,
you
I
see,
don't know.
Now you did a Russian fucking accent.
Shit. Shiksa over here can't do it.
Yeah.
I still can't get over you calling us three Jews in a shiksa with those, you know, real journalistic, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporting people.
Yeah, well, you think that was bad? I was listening to yesterday's show, and the guy from Webster's Dictionary was like really, really serious. He insisted on staying serious. And you're like throwing all these fucking remarks in there like a fucking 15-year-old, and he's ignoring you. He's like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God.
I was cringing here, Susie.
Really?
Yeah.
What did I say that was so bad?
I don't know. You said all kinds of shit, you know?
Well, that's what
I don't remember. You have to listen to the show.
That's what I'm here for, comic relief.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, when he's that serious, I cringe when he starts with that shit.
Well, that's when it's even funnier, when someone gets like, you know, so uptight about something, and it's like, God damn, their underwear must be so tight, like they have no circulation down there. Like, Jesus.
I know. Well, after a whole day of interviews, maybe it's understandable. I don't know.
I know. But, what was his favorite word again? I forgot. I've been trying to
Red stock.
Oh,
Red
yeah.
stock. I mean, how do you pick a
That's
favorite
word?
That's
not a favorite
like
word.
Yeah.
He was lying. That cannot be his favorite word. That's
how
a
can
dumb
that
word.
Be a favorite
That's
word?
That's a dumb word.
Yeah.
Like, chaw bacon. That's a good word.
Yeah. What words do you like? Have you ever heard?
Vociferous.
Vociferous?
Vociferous.
Vociferous.
And loquacious.
Oh, you're trying to be pretentious.
No, I like those words. They both mean the same thing, and they both mean really talkative like me, and I love them.
Yeah.
Both of them are like, shut the fuck up, okay?
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
I don't
vociferous
know. I mean, I
and loquacious.
Like, I have like favorite names, I think, but not favorite words. I never thought of it that way. I mean, why would it be a favorite? Because of the meaning or the way it sounds or the way it's spelled?
I like the way it sounds. Mm. You know, like I learned those words when I was doing like SAT review, and it was just like, ooh, you know, they're just good words. To just like, I don't know, throw out there randomly and just be talking to someone, and it's like, oh, you know, I was talking to this girl and like she's so loquacious, and like the person will do like a double take and they're like, huh? You're
loquacious.
Like, yeah, that's a 25 cent word, bitch, take that.
Oh man, so we got a great author coming up. We're going to call them in about 10-15 minutes. Mr. Jonathan Engel, and he wrote the book called American Therapy: The Rise of the
Psychotherapy.
Oh,
the rise of
psychotherapy
in the United States.
They wrote The Rise of the Psychotherapy. I don't understand that.
Oh, that's not what the cover says.
I know. That's why it sounded wrong to me. So it's The Rise of Psychotherapy in the United States. And I think this is pretty cool, you know? I mean, so many people are in fucking therapy now.
And on medication. You know? It says from Freud to Zoloft. That's really funny.
I know. But we definitely take a lot of drugs. But you know what? I mean,
I've never been less depressed since I went off my antidepressants.
Really?
Can you imagine me
they
on antidepressants?
They made you depressed? They made you depressed?
Antidepressants?
Yeah.
Oh, they got me all fucked up.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So that means you're not depressed.
Well,
you know, I mean, if it didn't fix what was wrong.
I was depressed at the time, but only because I was using so many drugs. I had no serotonin left in my head. And I was like, I hate myself.
Go.
You know, I have no need to live. And the doctor, like, I couldn't tell him I was a drug addict.
Yeah.
If I told him I was a drug addict, then he would be like, all right, well, you're not depressed. I'm not going to give you your drugs anymore.
Yeah.
So I went to him and I was just like, you know, I'm depressed. I don't want to live. I hate
really?
Myself.
Were you functioning at the time?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, it was probably depression, but not a very deep one. Because when you're like in a clinical depression, you're not functioning very well.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't know. He had me on all kinds of like anti-addictive medication or anti-addictive behavior medications because everything I do, I get addicted to it. Like if I'm picking
right.
work, you know, I'm addicted to that. If I'm picking school, I'm addicted to that.
Yeah.
You know. Whatever it may be.
I know, that's terrible. That's why I try not to pick up a lot of things, because I also am like that, you know?
But, you know, a lot of the things that I get addicted to, they're not really unhealthy things, but, you know, I've got the unhealthy things, too.
Yeah, you do.
But, I mean,
So, what's healthy that you're addicted to?
Like salad. fruit, vegetables, yeah. Biking.
Mm. That's true, yeah.
Traveling,
these
sex.
These are healthy things.
Masturbating.
Yeah. Good, so it's all good things for your health.
Yes, yes.
Good.
You know, so I balance the good with the bad. What?
Masturbating.
What? There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't.
The one, we were actually talking about...
But to be addicted to it, that's funny.
Why?
I don't know. I guess I am too... I don't know. Everybody that masturbates is addicted to it. I mean, I'm sure once you do it, it's pretty cool, so you do it again. Over and over.
Did I ever tell you the one time, like, just, like, weird, creepy habits that people have? My friend was telling me about, like, you know, his plumber or whatever, you know, one of his workmen. He would steal dirty underwear from women's homes.
Really?
And then he would take the underwear and he would put, like, a couple drops of water on the crotch and put it in the microwave.
Really? So it really stinks?
So it really stinks. Really? It would, like, be nice and steamy. And then he would, like, rub his face in it.
Wow. And he actually told this other guy that he does this?
Yep, yep,
really?
Yep. So there was that, which is really creepy.
Where
I don't
the
know.
Fuck are people so fucked up? I mean, where would that come from?
I have no idea.
You know?
I mean,
maybe,
like,
he did that as a kid, you know? I mean, maybe he had a, you know, his mother or a sister or something, and
aww.
He would, maybe he was just turned on by pussy, so we
oh,
just...
Oh, man.
Yeah. But
well,
this sounds like something from childhood.
That's some serious issues. That person needs psychotherapy.
Yeah.
But, you know the guy Justin who called in yesterday?
Yes.
He was telling me a story about how he slept with this girl, and, like, she was super hot, and she had these, like, tiny little thong panties, and... He was telling me how his dog, you know, like, really likes sex and how uh-huh. his dog is, like, kind of involved in the bedroom at all times and, like, has to, like, jump on top in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got to lock the dog out of the bedroom.
Right.
Whatever. So he didn't lock the dog out of the bedroom and the dog ate the girl's panties.
Mm-hmm. But right through the crotch, right?
No. She had taken them off.
Right. But he ate the crotch
part. No, he swallowed them whole.
The whole fucking thing?
He swallowed the panties whole. So,
because, I mean, I know dogs love this. When I had a dog...
Goddamn dogs love yeah, vagina.
I mean, you know, I remember. I mean, he'd always grab the fucking woman's underwear. I don't see which one it was. Doesn't matter. But, and just eat through the fucking crotch. You know, by the end of the by the end of the session, her fucking underwear or shorts or whatever
is totally
chewed up.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait, so you're saying there's a woman who's wearing underwear and she's
no,
having
no, and
a
she
sex
takes it off. No. We had sex.
Oh, okay. So
let's
she takes the underwear off okay. and then the dog's having its own sesh with the undies
yeah,
while you're fucking.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha,
by the time you're done, the underwear is all fucking chewed up and
all right,
shit.
I'm catching what you're throwing. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Good, okay.
So
so what I'm saying is that dogs are attracted to that.
Oh, wait, trust me, I know.
Yeah.
Never mind. But so anyway, this dog, Justin's dog, ate this girl's, like, little set of panties. And
mm-hmm.
so after they're finished fucking, she realizes that she's got to go to work. And so she's like, where are my underwear? And so she actually was, like, accusing him of stealing her underwear.
Really?
And so she's like, you are such a fucking pervert. I can't believe you stole my underwear. Oh, my God. Like, ah. And she throws her, like, her little mini skirt on and, like, leaves the house, like, furious.
Yeah.
Absolutely furious that, like, this guy.
So she's convinced that's what happened.
She's convinced that that's what happened.
Wow.
So, like, 5 hours later, his dog pukes.
Yeah, I was going to say, what happens to the dog? I mean, this thing's not going to go through
his system. He pukes the underwear hole right back up again. And this guy actually saved the underwear, like, in the dog puke,
uh-huh.
like, put it in a plastic bag and, like, you know, to prove to the girl. Because he called her and he was like, listen, you know what I mean? My dog ate your underwear. And she's like, you're such a fucking liar. And he's like, no, I swear to God, you know, come back over and I'll show you the evidence. And so he's got the panties, like, you know, enmeshed with, like, the fucking dog puke. Oh, God. Okay, speaking of nasty things... If we have any really, like, disgusting listeners out there that really want to see something disgusting, I was introduced yesterday to cakefarts.com.
Yeah.
Did you
and
look
what's
at
that?
It?
Well, I just started. We didn't have time.
It is the most
so
disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. It's this girl, and, you know, Lane's roommate actually made me watch it. I actually had to run out of the room. It was so disgustingly
really?
Bad. There's a chocolate cake that's sitting on the counter.
Uh-huh.
And this girl was just like, cake farts. And so all of a sudden you see her, like, get up on the counter, and so she takes her panties off and she starts straddling the cake.
Uh-huh.
And she's just, like, rubbing her, like, clit and her ass, like, all over the cake, and then, you know, her whole entire ass is covered in this fucking cake.
Really?
And then all of a sudden there's a close-up of the camera and she, like, farts, like, all of the icing, like, off the top of it. But it just, I'm telling you, I'm not even doing it justice.
They devoted a whole fucking website to this?
Yes. Yes. Well, and then there's a whole other one called Pudding Farts.
Well, oh, at least it was a sexy girl with her pussy on the cake,
oh,
right?
Oh, it's so
I'm
disgusting.
Sure some guys would eat that gladly.
Ew! Yuck! Fucking perverts. We're worse than dogs.
I'm telling you, especially men.
Oh.
You know? Really worse than dogs.
I feel badly for the author that's calling, or that we're calling in a minute. With this segue.
Well, but they're all like that, you know? I mean, they probably, like, beat their head against the wall afterwards when they talk to us.
We're so fucking bad, Sam. We
I'm
really
telling
are.
You, I'm telling you. So what happened with Lane? I mean, you never finished that story.
So I was just, I don't know, at his house. We watched the movie Sideways, and then...
Did you make out and stuff?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
No full-on sex yet?
No.
Not yet?
Well...
Are you planning on it?
What do you consider sex?
Well, for me, sex is anything that has to do with the genital area, okay? And
what if there was, you know, let's say hypothetically. Mm-hmm. This is definitely a big hypothetical.
Okay.
What if there was, like, maybe clitoral stimulation with the underwear on?
That's sex.
That's not sex.
That's not sex.
That is not sex.
No, it's not intercourse, but it's sex.
No,
sex
it's
is not just fucking intercourse. Okay, why do they call... Okay, does giving a blowjob, do you think that is
sex? And
by
the way, that was a hypothetical.
Yeah, okay. But to you, is a blowjob sex?
Hypothetically speaking?
Yes. No, because you've said before you don't consider it sex.
I don't consider it sex.
Right. What about cunnilingus?
No.
That's not sex.
No.
Okay. So, how come you can't do it on the street?
Because you're not you're not allowed to be naked.
Okay, so you can't expose yourself,
yeah.
You say. Okay.
It's for the children.
Right.
It's for the kids, goddammit.
Now, let me ask you this. If we are like in a monogamous relationship,
yes.
Right? And you find out that I gave this chick cunnilingus.
At least you didn't fuck her.
Okay, so you'd be okay with that?
I wouldn't be okay with it. I'd be a little pissed, but...
Why would you be pissed?
Because, I don't know, maybe she's got some nasty STD festering down there.
No, that's not what bothers you. What bothers you is you imagine me eating her out. And you know that this is something that you should have and not somebody else. And, Susie, that's sex, okay?
I disagree.
It's called oral sex.
Okay? All right. Oral sex. Fine.
Okay, so it's sex.
But it's not the same. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. Okay, you fucking... Can you get a fucking magazine on the street with... oral sex in it? I mean, just like, it's going to be displayed with all the porn. It's not going to be just like, you know, near Business
Week
and
shit. Well, I'm not saying it's not Business Week.
Yeah, I mean, this is sex, Susie.
I mean, it's sex, but I don't know. It's just not the same. It's not.
No, it's just not intercourse. That's all. You know? I mean,
in my generation, like, I don't know, giving a blowjob is like making out with someone.
I suppose, yeah.
Which is rather, I don't know.
That's
very,
what I've heard.
It's very unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. So it takes everything away from it, you know? I mean, so then all
these. I still
really
remember the first penis I ever saw.
Yeah?
God, I was...
How old were you?
I was probably 15.
And you saw an adult penis?
Yes. The guy was 18. And I was over at my house, and he came over to visit. And I'd had a crush on this guy for so long. And so I put on, like, my sexy little underwear, and I was trying to be all cute and coy and, you know... I really had nothing to say to this guy, so I'm just like, tee, ooh, hi.
Were you scared?
I was petrified.
Really?
So he comes over, and we're on my couch, and we're like, you know.
You've never seen a penis before,
no.
Even in a picture?
No.
Really?
Nope.
Wow.
And so we're making out on my couch. I think we were watching like 90210. And I don't even remember like how his pants got off or if it just came unzipped, but it was just... It was so pink.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this pink thing, and I didn't know what to do, so I poked it. Oh my god! And he was holding his breath and like waiting for like some amazing blowjob or something. And here I am, just like poking it like a piece of meat, and I'm like, I had no idea what to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he lets out his breath and he just starts chuckling, and he's kind of like, okay. And he pulls his pants on and he like gets up and he's like, all right, sweetheart, I gotta go, and like gives me a kiss like on the head. Which is like the worst thing in the world, because I thought I was like being so grown up and poking the penis.
Now let me ask you this. How do we segue from that to the fucking author?
We segue from that by saying that Susie, you know, is the perfect example of, you know, the American who's been in therapy forever.
Okay.
And this is
so
why.
You're a classic case,
I'm
right?
A classic case.
Okay, so we're calling Jonathan Engel, American Therapy. You think East Coast?
I'm going to give this book to my mom for Christmas.
Are you? Okay. Yeah, look what you've done to me, Mom.
Hello?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Jonathan Engel.
This is he.
Yes, good morning. This is Sam and Susie in the morning calling you from LA Talk Radio.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
We're good. Where are we calling you?
I'm in New York City.
Oh, well, why are we not surprised? Almost every author seems to be from New York, so you're in the right place, it seems.
Oh, okay. And you're in L.A., obviously.
We're obviously in Los Angeles, yes,
yes
sir.
Okay.
Yes, what's it like in New York today? Is it raining, cold?
No, actually, it's kind of a clear blue early wintry day, about 40 degrees, clear blue skies.
Wow. Oh, I love days like that in New York.
New York is awesome during the holidays.
It really is.
It's amazing.
It's true. Although, I have to say, it's a little less busy this year than it's been in years past.
Oh, really? Because of the economy, you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Far fewer shoppers. Oh. Well, a lot of people looking. I think not so many people buying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, which brings us to your book, American Therapy, The Rise of Psychotherapy in the United States.
Right.
And you give us a little bit of background on you, because obviously you've taken on this big undertaking to put together the history of therapy in the United States. So a little bit of your background.
Right. So I'm actually a medical historian. I've studied history for years. I have a PhD in history, and I've always written about the history of medicine and the history of health and healthcare. So I wrote a big book on AIDS, and I wrote a book on Medicaid and charity hospitals and healthcare. I'm writing a big book now on health reform over the last 40 years. So that's what I look at. I look at the way we deliver medical care and deliver health care and how that changes over time and who pays for it and whether it works or whether it doesn't work and how our ideas about that change over time.
Right.
Wow.
So do you think the situation, the way people view mental health has changed? Has it improved a little bit?
Oh, sure. It's changed profoundly. I mean, I think if you asked even people, say, 30, 40 years ago, I'm not talking a century ago, there was a great deal of stigma attached to mental health issues. Many, many people, if they were in therapy or getting help for mental issues, would not tell people, and they wouldn't even tell close friends. Maybe they would tell their spouse. There was a sense that if you were getting psychotherapy, you were crazy or there was something really wrong with you.
Right.
And I think that's changed profoundly. I mean, I think it's become...
It's become trendy now.
trendy or certainly very acceptable to say that you're having a tough time with some things in life and you're getting some therapy to work it out a little bit. It's just become a very ordinary part of the way people cope with life. It's certainly a heck of a lot healthier than drinking 3 martinis every day as a coping mechanism or doing drugs. So I think there's an understanding much. I think there's a much bigger understanding that for many, many people, life is hard, maybe even for most people, and that an awful lot of us need a little help getting through the day, if not every day, then at certain difficult times of life, times of change or times of loss, or you've lost a job or your marriage is breaking up. But these are very hard, even for very well put together people, and an awful lot of people just need a little help working their way through it.
So what about psychotherapy with 3 martinis a night?
Well, it's funny. I have a whole chapter in the book about alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the biggest reasons people go into psychotherapy today actually is substance abuse counseling. It's one of the things that drives people in there. And interestingly, the alcoholism is one of the biggest health problems we have in the country. About 12% of U.S. adults are alcoholic, which is relatively low. For example, in Russia, which is the highest in the world, it's closer to a third. About a third of Russian adults are probably what we call alcoholic. So, it's a huge problem, and anyone who's ever had to live with an alcoholic or is an alcoholic themselves, you know that it can just devastate your life. And classic psychotherapy is not particularly helpful with alcohol abuse, but Alcoholics Anonymous, which is really kind of a form of group therapy, has sort of been brilliantly successful, and it's uniquely American. It's very bottom-up. There's no hierarchy. There's no real organizational structure. There's no fee. There's no admissions requirement. Really, anyone can join Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been unusually successful, really just straight through talking and through group dynamics. It has helped millions and millions of people kick the bottle and get their life back. About half of all people who enter Alcoholics Anonymous will eventually be able to stop drinking. It doesn't always happen right away.
Right.
Sometimes, you stop and you start again, you stop, but eventually you do get off.
Yeah.
So it's been phenomenal. And in fact, people who do group therapy have learned something from Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is group therapy with a little bit extra. It's group therapy with God and with social judgment. And all that seems to be necessary to get people to stop
drinking. The God part is always kind of... made me, you know, kind of interested in that. Because, I mean, I don't know, you always kind of see all these different religions, like, coming together in the Alcoholics Anonymous thing, and...
Right, because right. they view you know, this as a higher power, you know, it's not a religious thing at all, but right. But they want you to admit you are powerless and that you have to accept the situation and fight it in spite of it, you know.
Right, well, that 12th step in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is accepting a higher power, you're right, it doesn't specifically say God, but something sort of God-like, but
right.
an admission that there is something bigger and more important than you
right.
in the cosmos.
Right.
And Alcoholics Anonymous has often been criticized for that. And yet they've refused to give it up. They've really stuck by it, and I think they've done that correctly. Many, many people who have hit a life crisis ultimately have to admit that there is a force in the universe larger than themselves, whether you call it God or just a force of goodness or a force of nature, this idea that you are not the most important thing on earth, that there is something broader and bigger than you.
Right.
It's actually a very important part of mental health.
So it helps when you're around other people that have the same problem.
Absolutely, you know, that's part of what Alcoholics Anonymous does, and it works in two ways. First of all, it's an understanding that you're not alone, that other people
right.
have this problem and gotten over it. But the other thing is that you can't BS your way out of a group of people who've been doing the same thing as
yeah,
you. One of the
that's
things
right.
alcoholics,
yeah.
You know, one of the things that alcoholics and certainly narcotics addicts are extraordinarily good at doing is rationalizing their behavior, saying, I'm not really an alcoholic, or I'm not really hurting anyone, or I really deserve this. And when you're faced with a room full of people who've been there before, they can just call you out on it. They can just say, you are full of crap.
That's right.
Jonathan,
you
know,
you have... Yeah.
Oh, I'm actually a borderline functioning alcoholic myself, and
at least she admits it.
I admit it, you know. But once upon a time, I did actually try going to AA, and I went in there, and they were like, you know, welcome, it's your first meeting, you know, why don't you get up and say something? And so literally, I got up and I told my story, and everyone was like, eh, we've heard it before. And I was like, what? I was like, come on, you know, that was something good, and that was fresh material, man. And they're just like, nope, we all have the same story. And I was like, God damn it, I'm not coming back.
Yeah, you see.
Well, it sounds like you've been able to get it under control on your own terms.
Yes, I have.
Whatever works.
She's
right.
the best rationalizer I've heard, you know, if you ever listen to the show.
You know, one of the things that I say about sex, people say, well, what's wrong with all these people who go to therapy for years and years? And the answer is, first of all, very few people go to therapy for years and years. The vast majority of people who go to therapy will go for under 6 months, and all the research shows that most of the improvement takes place in the first 6 months. But the other thing is, you know, when people say, well, what's the point of therapy? The point of therapy is to get your life back so you get out of bed and make it through the day.
Right.
And, you know, and to a certain degree, whatever works for you works. There's no one way to get through life, and a good therapist will work with each individual to try to figure out what it is they can do to help them get back to work and get back to being engaged in the world. So long term, the point of therapy is not to, you know, obsess about yourself. It's to build a solid enough foundation in your guts so that you can go out and start engaging in the world.
You see, I actually find, I see a lot of people that actually go to therapy and they really do, like, obsess about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they just become... Oh, go ahead.
Someone told me that's more of a problem in Los Angeles.
Hey, no.
I mean, listen, are there people who abuse or misuse therapy? Of course, and there are bad therapists out there who will indulge this. But a good therapist won't let it happen. A good therapist will say, you spent enough time here, it's time for you to stop. Or they'll say, you know what, you're not making progress with me. The point here is to move on, and you're not doing it, and you ought to find another therapist. Now, there are certainly unethical therapists who don't do that, who want the business. But I think there's a lot of very good therapists out there who will say, you don't seem to be making any progress with me. We're going over the same material. Maybe you ought to try to find someone else. And the other thing is that a good therapist admits their own limits. They may say, look, maybe you need to be on some medication, or maybe you need a different approach. But somehow the point is you're supposed to be making progress here, and that shouldn't take 5 years. I mean, you should really start seeing some progress in even a couple of weeks. And I would say that to your listeners. If you've tried therapy and it doesn't seem to be working, then switch.
I change therapists every year.
Forever.
Okay, yeah. So and I've been in therapy since I was 4.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And she's worse than ever, you see.
Oh, yeah.
But, Jonathan, I wanted to quickly go back a few years, let's say a few decades, a century, and go back to Sigmund Freud for a second, because this is pretty much the way you start your book off. Explain to us a little bit, because, you know, I think in today's modern times, when we look back, some of these things really look strange that he said and that actually became like accepted in society.
Right. So Freud wrote over 100 years ago. He was really trained as a neurologist, an MD neurologist in Vienna. And he was very interested in depression and anxiety. He himself actually had trouble with cocaine addiction early on in life. And,
it just smells so good.
Right.
Okay. And he started writing in 1895, so that's now 115 years ago. Mm. And, you know, many of his theories we've gone beyond now. There are very few people out there who would call themselves strict Freudians anymore. But some of what he had to say, I think, continues to inform us. I mean, one of the big things that Freud, I'll say, discovered or realized was the idea of the unconscious, that there's a part of your brain that has memories in it or experiences in it that you're not really aware of, that you could have, you know, pieces of your mind that are not really quite available to you. And at this point, most of us really accept that there's sort of stuff way back there in our memory stores that maybe we're not really quite aware of. But before Freud, people wouldn't have admitted that. I mean, Freud really discovered that. And his other big insight was that certain memories can really play havoc with you as an adult, that you could have difficult memories or traumatic memories that can be stored back there, and that even though you're not aware of them, they can be playing havoc with the way you go through life, and that somehow you've got to bring that stuff up, and the best way to do it is through talk. So, I mean, some of Freud's insights really continue to inform us. I mean, I think that's what most psychotherapists would say, is that you're in therapy to talk about difficult things. I think what Freud wasn't very good at was helping people develop life strategies. Freud felt that if you just talked enough, that would do it. And I think most therapists today, particularly cognitive behavioral therapists, are far more applied. They'll say, just talking is not enough. We've got to figure out what you're doing wrong, and are there ways you can think about things differently that are more constructive? You know, you say that you're very frightened in a social situation. All right, so first thing would be to try to understand why that's happening, but that's not enough. Then you've got to go figure out, are there different coping skills we could give you so that next time you're in a difficult situation, you can deal with it better and more constructively?
Right.
So we've gotten much, much better
that's at giving
people very tangible tools to help get through life.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, there's just so much to talk about, I think. But to summarize, would you say that people are better off now, that there's less stigma? Or, are people having more problems now? Or is it just that, like you said, there's less stigma, so people are coming out and admitting this?
I don't think people are having more problems. I think just we're more aware of the problems out there. I mean, right. I think that historically there was all sorts of problems going on in families. There was violence and abuse. There was depression. You know, we read about people in the 19th century who took to bed for 2 years. Well, they were obviously very depressed.
Right.
So I think I don't think it's that people are in worse shape today. I think we're more aware of how hard life is, and we're more willing to come out and talk about it and to seek help.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that make life a little bit harder. I mean, life is faster paced today. I think we move around more. There's no question the breakdown of traditional family is very hard on children. You know, we have much higher divorce rates today.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that people live longer today, there was a time when everyone was dead by the time they were 45 or 50.
Right.
So you were so busy working yourself to death, you didn't really have time to get depressed.
Yeah.
You know, now we live longer and we've got more leisure time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Jonathan, I've got a question for you.
Sure.
Now, the military is probably one of the most interesting things for me when you talk about therapy, because you know, they don't like when people have been in therapy.
Wait, really?
Yep.
That's interesting. Certainly, the military is very aware of your mental state. They run you through a battery of tests, because if they're going to put you in a unit under combat, they know people can crack. On the other hand, the military has often been at the forefront of treating emotional issues.
But that's really only after they've been through, you know, they've had the issues happen. Because
that's right. So there's a screening procedure on the way in. It's true. On the other hand, you know, because combat is obviously very, very stressful, the military for a very long time has had to deal with young men and women breaking down, and they've had to, in many ways, during World War II. The Army all but invented the modern practice of clinical psychology, where they took people off the front lines who were having nervous breakdowns. They quickly got them into sort of a therapeutic shelter, and they helped put them back together. So, you know, I think you're right. The military has a job to do, and they're aware that someone who's really mentally unstable can compromise their mission. On the other hand, I think that the military has been thinking very seriously about these issues for much longer than most Americans. I think the Army actually has an interesting story there. It's in the book. Yeah. William Benninger, who was the chief psychiatrist of the Army during World War II, was one of the most important figures in 20th 20th century American psychiatry.
Yeah, it makes sense since they have to deal with so many people, you know, and in sensitive situations and so forth.
Sure. And not even combat. I mean, you take a whole bunch of 18-year-olds. Many of them have never been away from home, and they don't know anybody, and they're often unsophisticated, and you suddenly put them into a unit where they've got to meet new people, often people, you know, if they've never met a white person or a black person or a Latino person, and then you plunk them down 5,000 miles away from home, and you're going to get a lot of dysfunction. You know, kids who've never been away from their mothers and fathers before, and suddenly there they are living in Afghanistan, surrounded by people they don't know, and even if they're not under gunfire, that would be stressful for most people, then put them under gunfire and bombs and grenades, and you've got a recipe for mental breakdown. So the Army has to think a lot about who's going to make it in that situation and who doesn't. Because if you have one person really falling apart, it can really bring down the rest of the unit. It can be very demoralizing if one of the people in that company or that platoon really falls to pieces.
Right. So today, actually, just to summarize, I think today people have really better hope of feeling better because it's so much more accepted and help is accessible.
That's exactly right. It's not just therapy. I talk about in the book also a lot about the huge advances in psychopharmacology, the medications over the last 25 years, the Prozacs, the Paxils, the Zoloft, the Xanax.
Lexapro.
Sometimes this stuff is overused, but I would also hurry to say that it has been a salvation for millions of people. You know, a combination of the right medicine with the right psychotherapy and a supportive environment can give people a new lease on life, and it has for millions and millions of people. There's never been a better time to be alive than today in terms of mental health. We're better at it and more aware of it than ever before in history.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a positive note. We thank you so much for coming on the air with us. American Therapy, The Rise of Psychotherapy in the United States by Jonathan Engel. And I read part of the book and found it fascinating. So we're definitely going to delve a little more into it. Congratulations and all the best luck with the book.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, Jonathan.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Jonathan.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
The reason I brought up the military was because when I was a security holdover waiting to get my my top secret security clearance, which never came, but basically there was this one guy, Jonathan Walker. He was the most amazing soldier. Like, you know, he was like the leader of our platoon and everything else. He had been there at Fort Jackson, South Carolina for 2 years as a security holdover just because the military would not give him his clearance. You know, they were still like investigating his background because he had been in therapy when he was 12 for his parents' divorce.
That's terrible.
His parents like forced him to go to therapy, you know, when they were getting divorced.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for 6 months or something, you know, he was in therapy. And all of a sudden the military is like, nope, you know, we're not going to give you your clearance because, you know, you're in fucking therapy.
Yeah.
And they had issues with me being in therapy, too, you know, and being on medication.
That's terrible, because they discourage you from seeking help,
They discourage you from seeking help, and basically, a lot of the time, they're just like, all right, you know, if you want to try and admit that you have a problem and you are actually seeking help for it, you know what I mean? Like, you know, boo-hiss, we're not going to let you in the military.
Right.
Or, you know, we're going to, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I kind of have issues with that as well. Yeah. And then I also have a professor friend who has a friend who is an Army psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, he's not, he hates his life. He absolutely hates his job, but he kind of has to do it. You know what I mean? He's kind of stuck in his job.
Right.
But basically, he's not really allowed to give people therapy, you know, in advance. He's got to wait until they're all fucked up.
Really?
And then he just kind of has to, like, treat them and be like, okay, you know, take this pill, you know, don't call me again.
Yeah, I think we still have a long way to go, you know, as far as mental health and stuff, you know, but it's getting more recognized, you know. I mean, it's even better than I think it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? So,
but I do see it becoming, it is rather trendy. You know, like if you watch like Entourage and all these shows, it's just like, you know, oh, I gotta go. I'm late for therapy.
The Sopranos and, you know, and all that.
Oh, yes.
Let's take a phone call. Good morning. You're on the air with Sam and Susie.
Hey, it's Greg in Cleveland.
Hi, Greg.
It's Greg in Cleveland. Is this the first time you guys spoke?
No.
No, you guys spoke before?
No, we've talked a couple times.
Oh, okay. I don't remember you calling in. Ever.
Back when we were in our old studio.
Well, the last time I called in, I was a little overpowered by Tracy Bingham.
Ah, that's what it was. Okay.
Yeah.
Greg Rempe.
I think we talked a couple times before.
Yeah. Greg Rempe, definitely the voice of LA Talk Radio, does all of our voiceovers and stuff, has a great show, Barbecue Central, tonight at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock for Greg.
Greg, I was actually promoting your show at a place called Baby Blues Barbecue in Venice.
Yeah, I know that place.
Oh, I love that place. And I went in there and I was handing out business cards like, oh, I talk radio. I'm like, I talk about you guys all the time. And I was like, there's also a barbecue show.
There you go. Tell them to tune in. Yeah. But listen, forget about any of that.
Yeah.
I was every Monday I'm in the office and I was able to switch desks a couple weeks ago and finally get like an actual machine where I can stream audio so I can listen to you guys. And I got back from lunch right at 12, started listening, and then right at the end of the show, you whip out that story with the girl getting her finger, with some guy jamming his finger right up her asshole.
There you go.
And I was so shocked and taken aback.
So
was
she.
There was a guy next to me in the queue, and he was listening too, and he laughed. I mean, Susie, I can listen to you for days on end with your stories. You are like an enigma and just... entertaining all into one type of package.
Yeah. Thank you so much,
she's
Greg.
Definitely a gift to humanity. What would we do otherwise? What the hell would we talk about?
Oh, man.
Sam is, and Sam, you know, so good at just kind of not so not
dealing with me.
Stories out of you. Yeah, but, you know, no, I don't think people give Sam enough credit. You know, they think that, Susie just kind of starts telling stories, but Sam is just very, I don't want to call it devious, but it's a very nonchalant
way. Oh, he's very manipulative.
Pull out stuff from Susie that is, it's just a great time. You guys are so good.
Thank
very
you,
jealous
Greg.
Of your show.
Thank
I
you,
like
man.
I like to listen to it. What
Thanks.
Can I tell you?
Yeah, you're amazing, and then Greg loved this so much that he put together a little clip from yesterday,
okay,
summarizing what we did.
I was inspired. What can I say?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I could offer some inspiration to you out in Cleveland.
I definitely don't want to go to any clubs in L.A. because I'm afraid somebody's going to stick their finger.
No,
in my
this
asshole.
Was in Vegas.
Yeah, this was in Vegas actually.
Well, you should have seen this guy. He was an Argentinian Johnny Depp lookalike who had like eye makeup on, and he was just like so intense. Good. And like, have you seen pictures of my roommate, the girl who was diddled?
Lisa.
Is that the one where you guys are naked together?
Yeah, that would be her.
Yeah.
On Facebook.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah, so that
Who
was,
hasn't?
Shut
I don't know
up.
Now.
That's the funny thing. My mom's always like, oh my God, will you put a bra on? And I'm like, why? I'm like, everyone's seen my boobs. And she's just like, oh my God.
Now literally now.
Literally now?
Yeah.
I took down the really dirty ones.
Yeah,
the one
she
where
did.
Your whole boobs were out?
Oh, you saw that one.
Yeah, you could see. Yeah, you could see.
I was listening to the replay and immediately logged right on.
Yeah, there was definitely boobage there.
I thought my boobs looked really great in that picture.
Actually, they didn't. The one looking from above?
I don't know why you don't like that picture. I really like it.
I don't know, because it doesn't make them look very good.
I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
What the hell?
It doesn't matter.
My opinion.
You're happy with your boobs. That's all that matters, Susan.
Oh, I'm quite happy with them.
She's
I run
very
around,
proud of them.
Run around, bouncing around with them all day.
Yes, she reveals
I take them everywhere
to,
I go.
To anybody who just wants to look.
Oh,
Greg,
God.
When are you going to come visit us in L.A., man? I mean, you've been with the station for a year almost. And you need to get down here, man. Maybe we'll get a ticket for you and you can come down here. How is that?
Yeah,
I'm sure you'd love that.
You know, it's you only see that professional production side of me and the show host for the hour on Tuesdays. But
I'll take you out and show you a real nice time.
I got a busy life here that's, you know, very hectic with different schedules and stuff, so it's hard to find, you know, a weekend where I can actually leave for, you know, a day or two.
Yeah.
You could stay with me, Greg.
Yeah, maybe Susie will come to you, you know, and then you'll get the feel.
Yeah, I'll set up a microphone and see what stories I can get out of it.
There Ooh. You go. There you go, you see.
No, Sam really is rather, like, manipulative and devious the way he, like, gets things.
No, come on.
Oh, yes, you are. No, and at the same time, you never offer any personal information. I try and, like, flip
you
the table.
You don't ask me.
I do. I try. Like, today I was like, enough about me. Let's talk about you. And you're like, ha, we haven't even talked about your night.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But, you can ask me anything.
The great sign of a true talk show host is one that can pull every and anything out of his guests and his co-hosts, but is very unrevealing about himself, and that's a mystery.
Exactly. Like, I don't even... Is your name
okay,
really
I'll,
Sam?
I'll take that as a compliment.
I don't think his name is even Sam. Like, I know nothing about this man. Who are you?
Well, you can ask. All it takes is come out of yourself a little bit and realize there's another person in the room.
All right, Sam, I'm going to be quiet from now on.
All right, Greg. Oh. Listen, thank you so much for calling, man.
And thank you for our clip that I haven't heard yet.
Yes, and we're going to play it right now, going to a break. So, yeah, everybody listen to Barbecue Central tonight. Greg, thanks so much for everything, man. We love you, and not in a gay way. You know that.
Hey, definitely love you guys in a non-faggot way.
Bye, Greg.
Bye, Greg.
Bye.
All right, so that's Greg Rempe, and he put together a clip from yesterday's show. So we're going to play that, and we'll take a break, and we'll be back right after this.
Previously on Sam and Susie in the Morning.
So we've been trying to get Lisa laid for a really long time, Sam, yes. 3 years.
Right.
So the Argentinian Johnny Depp lookalike guy, you know, he grabs her very aggressively, you know, and she was kind of consenting just by the way she was dancing and by what she was wearing, the way she moved. But he fucking grabs her, Sam. He, first thing, 5 minutes into knowing her, he sticks his finger up her ass.
Really?
At the club on the dance floor.
Not her ass.
It was, and then he took his finger out and he smelled it.
What? Oh. How did he get to her ass so quickly and easily?
She was wearing a dress, and he just grabbed her and he shoved it right in there, like he was testing her oil.
Through a dress, though.
Underneath the dress.
Underneath the dress?
Underneath the dress.
Wow, what did she do? What did she do? I mean, she must have jumped. No, really. I mean, fuck, you know?
Oh,
finger
God.
Up your ass out of nowhere?
How shocking. Imagine you're just, you're dancing, you're drunk, you're having a good time, and all of a sudden, whoop! I was like, well, did he lick it first? You know, did he, lube it up? You know, or, I mean, that's just raw, rough, you know, shockage.
Yeah.
It's Sam and Susie in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
He walked into the party like you were walking onto a yacht. Your hat strategically dipped below one eye. Your scarf, it was apricot. You had one eye in the mirror as you watched yourself.
It's Sam and Susie in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
I love that song.
Yeah. We're getting all kinds of feedback on the finger in the ass thing.
More?
Well, I mean, you saw. I mean...
You know what?
That was some story, man.
After like the first week of, you know, doing Sam and Susie in the Morning, I was a little bit worried. I was like, you know what? I'm going to run out of things to say.
Yeah. Not you.
We've been talking, like, actually, I tried to, like, figure out, like, the hours of how many hours, like, we've actually, you know, been on the radio.
Uh-huh.
We've had a lot of, like, we've done a lot of fucking talking.
We have. You know, I mean, when I look at the archives, if you scroll down, it's like, it goes on forever.
I know. And it's just so funny. It's like, we've had hours and hours and hours of meaningless conversation.
Meaningless. Totally fucking
absolutely
pointless.
Absolutely meaningless.
Well, somebody's got to do it, Susie.
Like,
you
nothing,
know?
It's, you know, it's like nothing of consequence whatsoever.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. We say what we want, and we have nothing to say.
I know, all this shit happening around us. And we're so fucking self-focused here, you know?
I know.
So, wait a minute. So, we never finished talking about last night. You said you didn't have sex. That means
well, that
you
was
didn't
yesterday
have insertion.
Afternoon.
Right.
And afternoon.
So there's
delight.
No insertion, but there was clitoral stimulation, you said.
Maybe. Okay. Hypothetically.
That's fucking sex in my
no,
book.
No, it's not.
Okay. Did you come?
Maybe.
Okay. That's sex. You don't come from eating something.
I will say, for a 22-year-old, he's got some skills.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
This was actually kind of cute, though. He's so intimidated by me.
Really?
I don't think I'm intimidating. Am I intimidating?
I think the way you come across, yeah.
Like, he gets, like, so nervous around me. It's actually kind of cute. Yeah. But then yesterday, like, after our makeout sesh, you know, he took me out for pizza and everything, and then we went to biology class together. Usually he sits across the room, and we just kind of, like, you know, flirt, like, with our eyes, and we're just kind of like, hey, you know, and the professor turns around, give each other, like, a little smile or something. Mm-hmm. But yesterday he was like, do you think I should sit next to you in class? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, you might as well. He touched my clit.
Yeah. But so we walk into class together, and he sits down next to me. And this is a very small class. There are only like 15 people in it. Mm-hmm. And the whole class dynamic changed. Everyone was like, really? Oh, Lane and Susie sitting over here together. His face turned so bright red. It was so cute.
Really?
But yeah, I don't know. That was that. But then after that, you know, biology class and everything, I had to go meet up with the Franz, mm-hmm. The wonderful Franz.
Yeah.
And he's staying at this girl's house that I don't know. I think he might be sleeping with her. I'm not sure. But whatever. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But so I went to get my bike back. And so I walk into the house and I'm wearing the T-shirt that says, "You were never my boyfriend." Which is just, I don't know.
Yeah. What did he say? How did he react to that?
He just looked at it.
Really?
And he didn't say anything.
He didn't say anything?
He just looked at it.
Oh, God, you're mean. You're so fucking mean.
No, I'm not. I could have worn the one that says I'm not with stupid anymore.
Yeah.
That would have been really mean.
Yeah.
He's lucky that shirt is in Boston.
You were never my boyfriend. He was more a boyfriend to you than any of your other guys. You've been together for what, 6 months, eight
like
months?
10 months.
10 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I a can't boyfriend. Believe that. That was a long haul.
Yeah. He Oi. Should be proud of himself. I mean, he managed to do something a lot of other guys haven't.
I know, and he did it without doing anything. Mm-hmm. Like, he literally did nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what that says about me. But
yeah, what does it say about you, Susie? We've already analyzed this shit to death.
I know. But so this ended up being really weird because I walk in, and I was sleeping with this guy before I was sleeping with the Franz. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use his real name. What should I call him? We'll call him...
Josh. Okay.
Okay. No, I can't call him Josh. I have a friend, Josh.
Okay.
Rick. Okay, we'll call him Rick.
Okay.
So, no, I can't call him Rick. I'm gonna call him Bob.
Okay, Bob.
So I walk in and I see this guy Bob standing there, and I'm just like, "Hi!" And he's just kind of like ignoring me. He didn't hear me at first, and then he saw the shirt that I was wearing that says "You were never my boyfriend" because uh-huh. I was sleeping with him before the Franz, and he's just like, "Oh, gypsy," because he calls me gypsy.
Uh-huh.
He's like, "Classic gypsy, classic." And then he's like, "Beware the gypsy," and I was like, "What are you talking about? Beware the gypsy? You don't have to beware of me." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "I've got to show you this." He actually wrote like this whole like 3,000-word essay for his English class mm-hmm. on like. The intimate details of like our meeting and our initial eye fucking and like
really?
Yes, and I mean it was like it was extremely well written. It was actually quite beautiful and like it brought tears to my eyes when I was reading it.
Really?
Yeah, but it was entitled "Beware the Gypsy," Because apparently, like, he was totally in love with me, and I, like, broke his heart, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, I thought we were just, like, stooping.
Yeah. So how do you come across
that word
in the
right
essay?
Yet?
I mean, stooping, yeah.
Stooping.
That's good.
Well, I come across, you know...
Is positive a negative person?
Positive. You know, he's, like, obviously... You know, he kind of had it in a circuitous way. He was talking about how I obviously... you know, had some issues that were, you know, deeply rooted somewhere. But how we, when we first met, you know what I mean? Like, we went and got drunk at this, like, little Irish pub, and how I was like, I'm too drunk, will you drive me home? And he gets in my car, and the first thing he sees is a water bottle, and I was like, you know, drinking out of it, and he's like, and I was like, want some Chardonnay? And then he sees the baby seat in the back seat, and he's like, oh my God, run, she's a single mother, you know, and she's going to get, a, like, an open container. And so, like, he said, like, went into, like, the intimate details of how he walks into my house and how he's, like, looking for a crib in every corner and, like, waiting to see, like, a kid screaming. But I actually, you know, he kept saying I was going to, like, hate it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't. It was actually kind
of... So you found out you really broke his heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's no news, though, Susie. I mean,
well,
that's what you do.
Well, it was news to me, because, like, I thought, like, seriously, like, we were friends, we were bike riders, and we would just, like, fuck.
So maybe there's a message here for you. Maybe there's a message, stop breaking hearts.
Well, I didn't even know I was breaking a heart.
But that's what I'm saying to you. Is that I've told you that a million fucking times. I mean, we've talked to so many guys you used to be with, and you pretty much dumped all of them, right?
Yeah,
you see? So, you know what I'm saying? I mean, these are people with feelings and shit, you know?
But you know what?
And you just move on.
But, in my, you know, to my credit.
Yes.
You know, after they stop hating me, they love me again.
Yeah.
And, like, we always end up being great friends.
Yeah.
Because
I told you, people tend to forget bad things.
Every single one of them. I mean, like, I have done some atrocious things.
Yeah.
And I have broken hearts in not a very nice way.
No.
You know, I've been very, very selfish and kind of just, you know, going off in my own
way.
And leaving all the dead bodies in my wake.
Now, how long after you guys broke up did he write that?
He just wrote that last week.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow, so he's been walking around in this shit for years.
Yeah.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. Actually, I did he's a photographer, too, and I did, like, this kind of crazy naked photo shoot with him at Matador Beach up in Malibu.
Uh-huh.
I should show you the pictures of that. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Or no, I don't
know. Put those up on Facebook.
Actually, maybe I will.
Yeah.
Some of them are a little risque, though.
Yeah. I think everybody anticipates your pictures every day on Facebook. What's she going to come up with next, you know?
Oh, man. I'm wondering if there's, like, a picture limit on Facebook.
I don't know. Just keep trying.
I know.
I don't think there is. I mean, some people have, like, hundreds of pictures.
All right, explain this to me, and forgive me for being a little bit dense. shut up. What is the internet? Where are all these things stored? Like, how are they stuck there?
Okay.
Fuck
all right.
You.
There are computers. Called,
I get the computers.
Called servers. Okay. All right. But all it is just a computer that a lot of people can access at the same time.
Where is this big computer? I imagine it's a big computer.
No. It's. I mean, there's hosting companies.
Like the mother of all computers that just like runs the internet.
No. It's made up. That's why they call it internet because it's made of a lot of different pieces. You know, so you have a lot of these servers. So, like for example, look,
our website
sits on a server in a computer. At a hosting company, you know, so they do have like an IT center or something. They have a lot of computers and each one of these holds websites, you know, and then people just go on them. So, you know, when you upload your pictures, they go on Facebook's server on their computer. Yeah.
I still don't get it.
Why?
I don't know. It just seems very difficult to grasp. There's so much stuff out there. There's so much stuff on the internet.
But just think about it. It's just like everybody has a phone and everybody can connect to everybody. It's the same thing.
That's what
the internet is. I mean, yeah, everybody with a computer can connect to someone else with a computer.
Rosemary at Ralph's down the street does not have a computer.
Who the hell is that?
She's the lady at the checkout counter yesterday. And so I was wearing my shirt, you're never my boyfriend. She's like, oh, sweetheart, that's just hysterical. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to like officially break, you know, like, you know, finalize the breakup with my ex-boyfriend. I'm like, wearing this shirt. And she's like, oh, more power to you, sweetheart. You know, she's like checking out like, and scanning everything like that. And I was like, Rosemary, I was like, I want you to listen to my radio show. I was like, I just trashed the shit out of my boyfriend. I was like, I think you would get a kick out of it. And she's like, oh, what station? And I was like, it's an internet show. And she's like, oh, I don't do the internet thing. I don't understand that. And yeah. I was like, well, neither do I, Rosemary, but, you know.
No, you do internet all the time.
I know. I just don't understand what I'm
doing.
But
I just explained it to you. What's so hard to understand?
I don't know. It's just this weird concept, like maybe like stats that I just don't get.
Okay.
I just wasn't meant to understand it.
Okay. Well, read up on it a little bit. I don't know how much easier I can explain it to you. You know, I mean, there's computers all over the world. They communicate with each other. What's so fucking
it's
hard to
scary.
Understand? Look, you send an email. It goes from your computer to another computer, okay? And then another computer, and it goes from one to the other until it gets to the person you're sending it to.
It just happens, like, instantaneously.
It is. You know what really boggles me is Google, okay? Because, I mean, just think about it. They store billions and billions of pages. And when you search for something, it comes up instantly. I mean, the amazing results they give you, even if it took 2 minutes, I would still think it's a major, major feat, you know?
I know.
To be able to do that. And they do it in fucking split seconds.
See, it amazes you too.
Oh, yeah. I'm constantly in awe of all these things. I mean, it's just fucking amazing to me.
Like, I don't even know how people used to function without all this shit. Like, I
know.
Really don't.
I know.
Like, without cell phones and everything, what would we do?
Yeah. Well, we had payphones, and we'd go to payphones and shit.
Oh, man, speaking of payphones.
You see, you grew up on cell phones, right?
Well, no, when I was 10, we had, like, our first car phone that we bought, and it was, like, in a little suitcase.
I know, those are those
And
big
it never
phones.
Worked, really? Ever, ever, ever. You know, we would always, the connection would be lost, like, instantly. It totally sucked.
Yeah. I know, those were, like, car phones before cell phones and shit.
Oh,
yeah.
And speaking of phones, so I called to be the, you know, to have the interview to be the telephone actress yesterday.
Yes.
I love how the ad says, telephone actress wanted.
Yeah, well, what do you want them to say?
Well, so I call, and it was like, you know, for employment opportunities, press one. So I press one. And then it was like, I got a lady, you know, and she picks up the phone, and she's like, we're a phone sex company. You okay with that? Like, she just didn't sugarcoat anything. I was like, hi, my name is Susie. I'm calling about the, you know, the ad, you know, you place for telephone actresses.
Right.
We're a phone sex company. I'm like, oh. I'm like, actually, that's great. I have a talk radio show where I talk about sex all morning. She's like, what's another couple hours a day?
Yeah. Really?
But then it turns out you have to have a landline to be a phone sex operator.
Is that what it takes to qualify? What else
Bullshit.
Do you need?
Bullshit. You just need a landline.
A landline?
Who has a landline these days? I mean,
I
come
know.
On.
Well, I do.
Really?
I don't know what
well,
for.
Well, you're a weirdo.
Yeah. We don't use it. I don't know what the fuck we have it
well,
for.
Well, maybe you should get into the telephone actress line of work.
Yeah.
Actually, can I come over for 2 hours a night, Sam, and use your landline?
Yeah. You can just sit here at the computer and do it.
Is what that considered hell? A landline?
Yeah.
Really?
Of course.
Wait a minute. Wait. So I technically have a landline if I have a computer at my house?
No. We have... No. Well, you can have one. You can. But look, all you need to do is get a Skype with a phone number and people can call you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. But then the other cheap. Thing was that it's a minimum of 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
And so then I was thinking, I was like, all right, I talk 10 hours a week, you know, with Sam in the morning about sex. Then if I'm going to compound that with 20 hours of like just downright naughty sex talk, you know, that's 30 hours a week of sex talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's like that, and then on top of it all, like my own personal sex life. I mean, that's way too much.
Well, you are going to become a sex therapist.
I know, but I mean, I don't want to get burnt out like too early in my career.
Yeah, but you know what I figured? When you're a phone sex operator, what you can do is actually, I'm sure you could like get yourself all excited and shit. You know, just
but
masturbate on
no,
the line with
no.
them. No,
well, you're not into that? I was thinking about that, but I mean, I just imagine this like old hairy. Man being
then
like,
don't. That's what I'm saying. Don't.
Yeah, baby. Oh, let me stick it in your ass. And you're just like, ah.
Well, imagine it being a hot guy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you can imagine whatever the fuck you want. I mean, they imagine you. And,
this
yeah,
just,
I mean, there's a lot of ugly chicks doing that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, what do they care? They don't know what the fuck you look like. They probably never meet you, the employer. Right?
Actually, no, they do. You have to go down to the office in Burbank. And fill out an application in person.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But this, I just felt so, like, I felt kind of like this was a, I would feel bad doing this. I don't know. Or maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. Like, taking advantage of these, like, lecherous, creepy men.
Uh-huh.
Because they were like, you know, you get paid, like, $10 an hour, which is pretty good to, like, be sitting in your house, like, just being like, oh, yeah, you know, suck it to me, baby.
Well, apparently it's not good enough for you, though. I mean,
well, 20 hours, I wish there weren't a minimum.
Yeah. So that's like if you work 5 days, that's 4 hours a night or
exactly.
whatever a day that you
that's
have
like
to.
A full-time job.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But so then they were like, but yeah, then they're like, you get time and a half if you keep the guys on the phone really long.
Oh, really?
And I was like, that's just, you know, I understand, but like, that's so mean.
But it's not. I mean, that's what business is about. I mean, what the fuck, you know? A guy that's stupid enough to call those lines deserves to be charged.
Oh, yeah. I just feel bad for people like taking advantage of them like that.
I know, but you know, I mean, look, I never fucking, it doesn't matter how horny I am, I'm never going to call a fucking line like this. So,
I wonder,
you know,
who does actually call these things. If you're one of those
saying,
people that calls, you know, give us a call.
Yeah.
323-203-0815.
So you don't need to feel bad for them. I mean, if it takes them a long time to come, then it's not your fault.
And I was just trying to find ways to, like, imagine, like, making them stay on the line longer. And it's like, oh, I'm not finished yet. Oh, okay. You know, it takes me a really long time. And it's like watching the clock tick away.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I decided overall, maybe being a telephone actress is not really for me, you know.
No, don't do it.
I know. It's unfortunate, but...
But you know what? I mean, the thing is, why don't you do this? Why don't you start doing it, make some money until you burn out on it, and then stop, you know? I mean, what the hell, you know? I mean, you could probably have a couple of good weeks in you. You can make some money.
Yeah, a couple of good weeks in you. Yeah. Fuck, Sam, with the way I talk. Jesus.
Oh, wow.
And can you imagine, like, I go home for Christmas, and it's like, where'd Susie go for 4 hours? She's in the attic on the landline. Oh, my God.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Speaking of family, my stepfather, you know, I called my mom and everyone over Thanksgiving, and, you know, they passed the phone around to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I get to my stepfather, and he's like, Suze, I'm proud of you, but I've stopped listening to your radio show.
Oh, so he listened one time?
He used to listen to it.
Really?
You know, after I was telling the story about leaving the vibrator on his placemat and using his beard trimmers to shave my vagina.
Yeah, these people are fucking rolling in their grave if they
weren't
dead.
Oh, man.
Wow.
No, but he was just like, Suze, I'm proud of you.
Really?
And I don't listen to your show anymore.
Yeah. He's like, so why is he proud that you have a radio show and shit?
Yeah, he's proud that I'm doing the radio show. I don't know. He's just... I don't know.
Well, that was nice of him to say, you know? I mean, because nobody else says that to you, right?
I know. He's actually...
All the people criticize you, all your family and shit.
Yes, actually. Yeah. And it's so weird because I get the most uncomfortable when someone, like, says they're proud of me or that they love me. So
really?
I go home...
You feel uncomfortable with that?
I go home and, like, my stepfather, you know, the first thing he does, he's like, come here. And he gives me a big hug and he's like, I'm proud of you and I love you. And I'm always like... Okay, I don't feel comfortable with someone being proud of me. Like, don't say that.
Yeah.
Let's get drunk. Oh, this poor author. I'm like, cocaine. I'm like, it just smells so good.
Yeah.
I think I have Tourette's.
Do you?
Well,
I think we would have known it by now.
No, I don't think, like, you know, specifically with, like, words, but just, like, without being able to control the
what
things
you say?
I say.
Yeah. It's just that your mouth moves faster than your brain. That's all it is.
I do the
it's
same thing.
Tourette's.
I do the same thing in, like, biology class.
Mm-hmm.
Or in all of my classes. Yeah. You know, the professor will be making
it's because your brain works really fast. I mean, you don't stop and think about what you're going to say. You just say it.
Or do.
Yeah.
With my actions. Fuck.
Yeah. I know. You know what I realize is sometimes, you know, I mean, not just in regular conversation, but sometimes, you know, if you're like, I don't know, you feel like saying something and... What I do is I stop for a moment. I go, well, what am I going to accomplish if I say this? You know, because sometimes you just say something to someone just to hurt them or something.
Yeah.
But you figure, what am I going to get out of this? I mean, you know, where is this going to lead? And if it's pointless, then I just drop it, you know? And
no, you don't.
I do.
No, you don't.
Why?
Because you complain about your food all the time, and that hurts your wife's feelings.
Yeah, but, you know.
And hurts my feelings when I bring you banana bread.
Yeah, that's true. But no, I mean, I, you know. If I don't like it, I don't like it, you know? But, I mean, it's not like...
Well,
I
shut
think
up and
there
eat
is
it.
A point. No, there is a point because you let them know next time don't make it this way. You know, make it a different
you
way.
You are such an ungrateful little brat.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I'm not. I'm very grateful.
You're picky.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a little break, Susie, and we'll be back right after this.
I'm a middle-aged woman. And I'm really in my prime. I'm a middle-aged broad, and I'm looking mighty fine. Mature and sexy, healthy and fit, nice and ripe, and I can't remember shit. Oh, I'm irritable and crabby, and my mood is on the swing. It is. My cycles are irregular, and my underwear clings. never squat. There's a ringing in my ears, and I tend to fart a lot. A 5 o'clock shadow wasn't in my plans. Every time I sneeze, I frickin' pee my pants. Oh, I can't sleep through the night. My libido's out of whack. I got 5 focal contacts and I'm sweating more than Shaq. I'm feeling really anxious. Maybe I could score some crack. Or drink that black cohosh tea. I'm a middle-aged woman. I suddenly don't remember who you are. I must be a musician because I'm playing a guitar. Yes, I'm middle-aged here on this stage. I'm middle-aged, completely crazed. I'm a middle-aged. Don't mess with my social security. Middle-aged woman.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing your Obama National Security Advisor. At Secretary of Defense, a former Eagle Scout with a PhD from Georgetown University, Robert the Surge Gates. At National Security Advisor, he is the 6'4" former Supreme Allied Commander in Europe, Marine Corps General James, you can handle the truth, Jones! At UN Ambassador, a Rhodes Scholar out of Oxford University, Dr. Susan, don't call me Condi, Rice! And finally, a woman who needs no introduction, the junior senator from New York and the former first lady. She personifies power in pantsuits, Hillary Kegel Crusher Clinton!
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
In a world where shitty talk radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Susie in the morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
You know, we're just so dirty, the shit that we play here.
That last one wasn't too dirty.
Which one? Oh, the song?
Yeah.
No, not the song, but... you know, all the shitty talk radio, blah, 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 fingers and ass. You know?
Whatever, it works.
Yeah, somebody's got to say these things.
I know. Yeah.
I'm still bothered by that C on your head. On your head. It's got to be Chicago Bears, I'm telling you.
No, it's not. It's Cincinnati.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
So why am I thinking Chicago Bears when I see that?
I don't know.
Okay, well, we're going to check it out and see.
Okay, okay. Do that.
What's the name of the of Cincinnati's baseball team? The Red Sox?
Cincinnati. No. I think this is a football hat.
Cincinnati Bengals. There is no way that is a C for Cincinnati Bengals.
There is no fucking way. It's a C for cunt.
No, I'm telling you. Okay, let's bet.
Okay, I'll bet.
All right.
What are we going to bet?
This would be either the Cincinnati baseball you know, team that I don't know who they are.
Okay.
And Chicago Bears. Okay, so.
It's not, what are we betting?
Okay, somebody would fucking please call and let us know what the hell. who's got the distinctive C on their helmets?
I don't know. Actually, should I send a text and find out?
We can probably look it up, you know.
Too, I know. We'll look it up.
It's not that important.
What are we betting? I want to know what we're betting.
Okay. I don't know. Massage?
Wait, are we giving each other the massage?
Yeah. Whoever wins gets the massage.
I don't know how your wife would feel about that.
No. No massages.
Sam, that's like...
She's going to chew me out. Like,
oh, man. Okay, we have to buy the other one, a Thai massage.
A Thai massage.
Yes.
Yeah.
$40. Oh my God, this is actually really funny. When I was in
I like those.
I know, me too. They're downright dirty. Like this, like little Thai woman will just hop on you and mount you and grab your legs and like snap them over your head and you're just kind of like, whoa.
And then they stick their feet in your crotch and
yes,
shit.
Yes. Yes. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, this was, I have to tell you this. It was funny. So I was in Vegas when I was driving back on Sunday and like the traffic was so shitty and you know I stopped in Prim. And I gambled all of my gas money away that my dad gave me.
So how'd you get home?
Well, I had my own money to use to get home, you know, I always ask for an extra bonus.
I see.
What?
Oh, man.
Shut up. So I'm gambling, you know, I'm at the craps table, and I'm like, you know, the guy's like, you know, six hard. And I'm like, we like it hard. you know, they're just like saying all these things and I'm just making my little comments, you know, being oh so mature. So everyone at the table is just kind of like laughing at me and, you know, taking me not so seriously. But then there was like a little like Vietnamese or Chinese or Japanese, one of the eases, people. And he's, I don't know what you call him, like monitoring the table, making sure everything goes.
Oh, the role? Pit boss.
Yeah. The yeah. Yeah. Boss. Is that
yeah.
what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So he's like this little Asian guy and all of a sudden, I was like, $2, make you holla. And then,
you told him that?
Yeah. And then I said, and he was like, what'd you say? And I was like, $2, make you holla. $5, your wife can watch.
And you said that
I did.
Him?
And he burst out laughing. And he was like, say it slowly. And I was like, $2. And he's like, make you holla. And then he's like, what's the second part? And I was like, $5, your wife can watch. And so I like repeated this like 10 times as he's like trying to like, you know, repeat after me. Mm-hmm. Everyone at the table was just like, oh my God. And it was full of Asian people too. Oh my God, I'm just cracking myself up.
I know, you have absolutely no rules.
Oh man, but he was loving it too. He's like, that funny, say it again. I love when you laugh that hard. Yeah, it's really funny.
I love you a long time.
I love you a long time. Yeah. Oh, man.
When I laugh at what?
No, I love when you laugh that hard.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's just like,
I do laugh hard because you're funny.
You can't breathe and you're just like.
I know. Yeah, I can't believe some of the shit you say and do.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about the Frenchman? I actually kind of want to have him come in as a guest.
Just Frenchman?
I want us to make fun of him.
Yeah, why?
Because he's just really, you know, French people just have that pussy accent, and you're just kind of like, oh, okay.
A little bit of course,
oui, oui. So he was my boss at this restaurant in Venice where I worked, and it's a very, very snooty restaurant, you know what I mean? And so they never should have hired me by any means.
No one should.
But you know, I actually was very persistent, and I went every day for a month, and I gave them a new resume every day. Like, I would make a pink resume, I would make a scented resume, you know, different perfume. You know, I'm like, I'm going to be the next bartender at this place, and they're kind of like, all right. So I finally got the job, and you had to memorize, like, the really extensive menu list.
Mm.
And I mean, it's got all kinds of food and spices on there, and you're just like, all right, this, what the fuck is this? You
yeah,
know, really?
How am I going to remember?
I can eat this?
Yeah.
I actually have a good memory for things like that. So,
really?
Yeah. So then you have to take a menu test. And so I took my menu test, and I was standing in the back corner with a couple of the other waiter guys, and there was these three little old ladies sitting at the table, like, about to have their lunch. And it was my first day on the floor, and all of a sudden, Nico, the French guy, comes over, and he's like, Souci, you know, I take it, and I put it in you.
Yeah.
And so he just kept, like, and he kept doing this gesture, like, with his hand going in and out.
Yeah.
The old ladies were freaking horrified, and they're just like, oh my God. He was trying to tell me he took my menu test and put it in the folder, but he couldn't memorize or remember the words in English. But he's just got this fucking awful French accent. I take it, and I put it in you. And I'm just like, oh my God, Nico.
Do you realize you've told the story before?
Yes, a long time ago.
As you're telling you.
A long time ago. I just think it's funny.
Funny.
I want to have him come in the studio.
Okay.
We can make fun of him.
Yeah, yeah. But I want to ask Lisa what she felt about the finger in her ass.
I think
Do you
she
think
was
she
shocked.
Want to talk about it? Maybe you should talk to her about it tonight. See if she wants to comment on it. I'm really curious to know what she was
thinking. I think I
should
have used a different name for her.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't really want to have like this show associated with her work.
What fucking work, man? This is. Yeah.
Well, her website and with her design stuff. You know what I mean? Like, she wants to keep.
Nobody's going to put it together. Nobody knows her last name.
I know.
All right.
But, you know what I mean? It's just really funny that she doesn't want to be necessarily associated with us.
Yeah.
As far as her professional life is concerned.
Nobody wants to be associated.
Oh, man.
These authors that call in, they don't know what to expect. You know?
I know.
But we
I
treat
know.
Them with respect, right?
Yeah.
It's just if they have to listen back to it, they'll have to go through all the fucking
the
bullshit.
The cake part.
Yeah, the cake part. And the fingers in the ass, you know, and all that.
Oh,
until
man.
They get to the interview.
I can't believe I finally made it on one of the, you know, the best of Sam and Susie clips.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you have made it?
I don't know. The other ones are all you saying funny things.
No, you said something too.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, you were saying something.
I think I said, wow.
Yeah, the wow.
Oh, and that was it.
Yeah.
What else should we talk about? What's going
well,
on in the world?
Well, the thing is this, Susie, is I was telling you that in November, okay, we've reached 10,000 fucking downloads of our show.
I mean, that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of fucking people that are listening to our show, you know? And we sit here like we're just talking to each other and shit, and everybody scrutinizes the shit out of us. But it's cool, huh?
You mean scrutinize in a good way or bad way?
Either way. I don't care.
You know? I like the hate mail that we got.
Do you?
Yeah, that was
yeah,
really
we need
funny.
More hate mail. Send us more
I want
hate
more
mail.
Hate mail, too.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I just got another feedback from the guy from the Italian Catholic who turned into a Jew.
Oh, okay.
Because he sent me one of his comedy CDs.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give him a shout out.
Okay. Was that funny?
It was CD? Absolutely hysterical.
Really?
I have to actually give it to you and
yeah,
have you listen to it.
Yeah, bring it in and we'll play some clips here.
Oh, man. It was just to die for. He was like, you know, I was Catholic enough to realize that I was going to hell. So I decided to become a Jew.
Yeah. You know, talking about hell, believe this or not, but I booked a guy that wrote a book.
Dante's Inferno?
Back from Hell. And he says that he's been to hell.
What?
And he tells you about all the suffering and the agony and the fire and the brimstone and the devil. And
what's
brimstone?
I just thought,
it's like, you know, fire and shit, you know?
Oh.
Okay. And all the agony and the screams and blah, 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 blah. And the disconnect and all that. And I'm thinking, you know, this guy's like crazy enough to bring on the show. You know, I mean, for someone to publish a book like this, you know, it's like, but people talk about it as though it's a fact.
Ay, ay, ay.
So I don't know. I mean, give me a fucking break.
I mean,
know?
I guess
this whole idea of hell is invented by man. I mean, who the fuck would have been there and come back to tell you about it? You know,
Lucifer.
Yeah. Lucifer is the devil. Have you ever met him?
Yes.
Yeah. And he told you there is hell.
Yes, he said, okay. there's a place waiting for me.
Yeah. Did he have an accent?
It was, yes. It was Israeli. Oh, man, actually, I was in biology class yesterday, speaking of Jews.
Are we speaking of Jews?
Yes, we watched an Inconvenient Truth, the Al Gore movie.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of on global warming and greenhouse gases and you know, how the polarized caps are melting and basically we're just fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was kind of appropriate, and I was like, the world's ending because of the Jews! And I just, like, screamed it out in class.
You did?
Yes, and everyone was just looking at me, and they're like, what? I was like, Sam would have gotten it. I'm blaming, like, the end of time on the Jews and global warming. It's the Jews, goddammit!
Yeah, it is the Jews, you know? In fact, I called TJ's show yesterday, and I brought up the thing in Mumbai with all the killing and shit. And I asked him, I said, do you think the terrorists were Jews or Christians? Because I'm not sure exactly, you know, what religion was behind this, but definitely it was not Muslims, right?
Yeah.
So he's like...
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Jews are responsible for everything, right? But notice how they picked out a Chabad house, which is
a what?
A Chabad house.
God bless you.
Okay, thank you. Some people call it Chabad.
Okay. A chub?
Yeah, but...
A toad?
But at any rate, so this was like a religious place in India, and they raided and killed everybody.
Aww.
And there was a heroic... story about it that the nanny there smuggled a 2-year-old baby out of there.
Aww.
To safety, and then his parents were killed.
I just got chills.
Yeah, these things happen all the time, you know. I mean, Jews sure know how to mourn. Let me tell you, man, it's always fucking mourning about something.
I
know.
Yeah. Seriously, get over it.
It's not about get over it. If you were on the fucking receiving end, Susie, you'd be the same way.
Receiving what, Sam? Oh my!
Oh my!
Oh my!
We can't get serious here today.
I'm just kidding.
Doesn't matter what.
With the receiving end of
of this hatred.
Well, when I become a Jew, maybe I too will receive the hatred.
Yeah.
I think even if I become a Jew, like, I still won't get the same kind of, you know,
what?
Shit that you guys get.
Why?
I don't know. I don't think, like, you can really become a Jew. I think either you are or you aren't.
No, I mean, no, you can convert. I mean, I've seen some people that have converted and become, you know, really religious people.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still like it's an ethnicity too. You know what I mean? Like
it
they
is.
Just you just it don't is. Have the Jew curls.
You
like,
don't you have
just,
the heritage.
You don't have
either.
The Jew curls going on. Like it's just not the same.
Do I have fucking curls? Okay,
I don't
how
understand.
Can you make a generalization like that?
You keep your hair too short. I can't tell.
Jew fro. No, you need to go to Israel and see what
I would love
Jews
to go to
can
Israel.
Look like. Because I mean, here we see like American Jews. Okay?
Will you help
There's,
me?
Like,
will you help
look.
Me defraud the birthright program? I'm serious.
Yeah.
Because they call and ask you questions. They're like, they ask you like Jew questions and like, you know what
Do
I mean?
They?
And so I need...
Well,
I need,
I'll sit next to you and give you...
I need some help.
I'll give you the answers.
That would be amazing going to Israel.
Yeah. No, it's really cool there.
Can I stay
really
with your parents?
I mean, you know what? Almost everybody that goes doesn't want to come back.
I want to stay with your parents.
Okay. But I mean, for you, it would be like the best place because, like Tel Aviv, it's a bustling city all day
oh,
and night.
Oh, they've got good music there, too.
Yeah, and all day and night. So, I mean,
there's a lot. There's a good drug and dance scene, too.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you know?
Oh, trust me, I've got friends that have gone and just they party in Tel Aviv.
They party like crazy. I mean, people just go out at midnight.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It's the same with like New York and with all like the major, you know,
metropolis. There's a lot happening, you know, except for this fucking town.
Yeah.
You know, there's no excitement here. You know, everything closes down at 10 o'clock.
You're such a pessimist.
What? Fuck you, okay? I'm not. I've worked on it all my life not to be a pessimist. I think I'm pretty optimistic by now.
Well, you're like, this town sucks.
No. I just meant in that way.
Like this town in particular that we're in right now?
In L.A. You know, I used to really want to get out of
there. I managed to find things to do every night.
I used to hate L.A., okay? But now I love it.
Why did you hate
it? I like being here. I don't know, because of all the, I don't know, because there's no social life here, per se.
You should get a bike and start joining my bike club.
Okay, all right. When I find time for it.
You resign.
Yeah. But no, it's funny, because my wife found some email we had in the beginning, when we first were courting each other, let's say.
Oh, so, I thought you meant you and me.
No, my wife and I. No, when
they
when,
had email
when she
back then?
Come on, we met on fucking J-Date 4 years ago. Give me a fucking break.
J-Date cracks me up. Yeah. Oh my God. Keep
so
going.
So anyway, so she showed me an email that I sent to her and I said, you know, I went to the beach today riding on the bike. It's like really peaceful and stuff. And I used to do that all the fucking time. Every weekend I did
Really?
That. Yeah. I have a bike. You know, I got a bike, a $400 bike, mind you. And just riding up and down the path, Santa Monica, Venice.
That's impressive, Sam.
Amazing. Yeah, I used to do that. You see, when I was single, I did a lot more things. But now...
Blame it on your wife.
Yeah, you just kind of get older. You kick back, you know.
Isn't that boring?
Well, you see, that's the thing, Susie. In the past year, I've been working, so I haven't had time to be bored.
But isn't that boring?
But yes, definitely. I mean, last night I got to a point where at 10 o'clock at night, I told my wife, I said, I can't even look at the computer anymore. You know, it's just too much, you know. But... Again, thank God that I enjoy it, you know, because otherwise there's no way I could do it.
I know. I don't understand how people do jobs that they don't like.
Yeah, I know. It's very hard. But,
I mean,
you know,
I guess you've got to
put food on the table. You know, some people don't have a choice. You know, that's all
I
they can do.
I just push a button.
Yeah, you just push a
that
button.
That was easy.
Or you make a phone call.
That was easy.
There's money here.
That was easy. Oh, man. Actually, back in the good old days when I was bartending in Massachusetts, I was actually going to make a t-shirt that says, "When sugar daddies compete, I win."
I like that one.
Thank you. Because I actually used to have, like, you know, all these older men that would come into the bar, and I'm telling you, they would, like, get jealous if I was, like, giving attention to, like, one guy over the other.
Yeah.
And so they would start competing to see who could leave me more money.
Really?
One guy, like, actually would, like, he would have, like, only have, like, two or three beers. Mm-hmm. He would get out his checkbook and write me, like, $150 to $200 check.
Wow.
I was actually making more money than the restaurant was making.
He just wrote you a check for
every,
no reason?
2 days a week, he would come in and he would write me like, it would always be between $100 and $200.
Wow.
Or sometimes he would just give me like a $100 bill cash.
Yeah.
And his bill, his check was always like for two beers.
Really?
Yep. So it would be like a $6 check and then I would get like a $100 or $200 tip. And so then like my other like sugar-free daddy would come in and he was just like, how much did he leave you? What? Richie left you $200. Oh, well, I'm richer than he is. I'm going to leave you $300.
And you're just sitting back and enjoying this.
And I'm like,
this.
boys, please. You know, you don't have to be throwing money at me. Like, you know, this is ridiculous. Please. So
take the money and run. What the fuck, you know?
I didn't even have to, like, run. Like, yeah. I'm telling you, I would just stand there.
I know.
But so, like, this is my brilliant idea to, like, have this T-shirt made and, like, sold only at, like, Fred Siegel or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, when sugar daddies compete, I win. I win. Woohoo!
So have you given up on the new sugar daddy or what?
Oh, and the seeking arrangement.com?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. I've been slacking on it because I've had a lot of things to do lately.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'll work on that again.
But you got to pay the bills, Susie.
Oh, I know.
You got to find a source of income.
Actually, you know, it's kind of, I've been like inundated with nanny work this week, coming up on the weekend. It's like, and I don't know when I'm going to study for my finals. I'm kind of fucked. So that means I have to study for my finals today, but I really haven't spent enough time on Facebook lately.
Oh,
so,
well, that goes first. Comes first.
I think I'm going to do Facebook, seekingarrangement.com, which is the sugar daddy site.
Right.
Then maybe eHarmony.
And then four bottles of wine. And then...
No, I'm onto the box wine.
Oh, you're in the box now?
I'm in a box.
Sorry. Okay, so a box of wine.
Box of wine.
And that's eight bottles?
Six.
Six
bottles. 6.6.
And you can finish one in a whole night, in an evening.
Oh, no, that's pushing it.
Yeah.
If I'm doing that by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how much of it can you finish?
Actually measured the bag.
Right. Well, can you estimate? I mean, fuck, that's
no,
a lot of
fucking
wine.
No, because it's like
wine.
A sealed, it's a, you know, cardboard box.
I know.
And the bag's in there, and you can't x-ray vision into the box.
No, I know, but you can look on the box and see how much there is, you know?
6.6 liters.
Okay, and how much is a bottle?
That's like six bottles.
Okay. Okay, so there you go. Six bottles.
A box will actually last me, typically, you know, if I'm just like, I don't know, if I'm not... I have the box, like... I have the box.
Yeah, my love box.
I want to see your pussy. Show it to me. I should play you that song. You would love it.
Yeah,
actually, can
good.
I sing it for a minute?
Yeah, sing it.
Okay. I want to see your pussy. Everybody says it's nice. Can I come and visit? I'll be at your house tonight. They tell me it's soft to touch and really smooth. I can hardly wait to feel that pussy, too. You want to play with pussy all the time. To hide that kind of pussy is a crime. They say your pussy's clever and so slick. But I think that your pussy's really thick. Meow. I want to see your pussy. Show it to me. Let me see your pussy.
I'm sure Greg is going to do something with this one.
Isn't that song amazing?
It is. What about the Camel Toe song? I played it for you before, right?
I don't know. But then they have another one called Spank My Booty.
Because
spank my booty. Oh, God. I like mine better.
Have you heard this one?
Yes.
Okay, well,
we
some people haven't.
You're a beautiful girl. And your pants are on so tight that when you stand just right, I can see it all. When you're on the beach and your bikini's soaking wet, I see a fuzzy silhouette as I look down below. I see your camel toe. Your biscuit, your beavage. I see your cooter cleavage. Your monkey,
did he say
beavage? Your muffin.
Yeah.
You ain't
everything.
Had nothing. Your coochie, your flapper. You're showing off your snapper.
Flapper.
Your camel toe. It looks so right, so baby, let it show.
The bearded clown.
Bearded clown. I like that one.
Actually, I've got a picture on Facebook of me with lifting my dress up, and I'm wearing a thong. I'm wearing high heels and my dress like lifted all the way up, and I'm wearing this thong that says Maddie's Sail Off, which is my old bar.
Uh-huh.
I actually had a pair of underwear made that said "Freshest Clam in Town." with those thongs, it was great.
Yeah. Do you sometimes have camel toes?
I thought you were going to say a fresh clam.
No. Camel toes.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, you wear pants sometimes that tight, huh?
Well, I don't usually... I had pants on this morning that were that tight, and I took them off.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think it's gross to see camel toe?
Yes.
Yeah, you see women feel that way. Guys like it.
I don't think there's anything sexy about it.
You get to see the shape of the pussy.
I think it just makes a pussy look fat. You got the flab like overlapping and just kind of like flapping out there. I've never heard it called a biscuit.
You're a monkey, you're a muffin, you ain't had it nothing. You're Gucci, you're flapper, you're showing off your snapper.
I have a girlfriend, Michelle, that I want to bring in, but she's a raging feminist.
Really?
Raging feminist.
Good, I would love that.
And she would just have issue with everything. Like, I wanted to bring her. Can I bring her next Tuesday?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, she's a fucking raging feminist, and like, if you even just say pussy, she's just like, ah.
Really?
Yes.
Well, is she gonna know what's awaiting her?
Oh yes.
Oh okay.
I think. I don't think I don't think she thinks I'm that way. I think she thinks I'm an intellectual.
Yeah.
Because I don't really.
Well, you are, you know, I mean,
she went to Vassar, you know, and like I went to like, you know, all girls from my boarding school, like, you know, we just kind of, we always have like these really deep intellectual conversations. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't think she really knows this personality part of me.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. Like I have so many different like parts of me, like,
yeah,
you know, they're out there in the world. And I think she's going to be a little shocked.
Really?
Yeah. But let's do it. It'll be fun.
Okay, book her.
Okay, cool.
Anyway, we're at the end of the show, Susie.
I'm going back to bed.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm going to get my headshots taken today.
Actually, maybe I'll get my beaver waxed.
Beautiful. Beaver waxed.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I'll see if they have an appointment downstairs.
Oh, here?
Yeah.
You think they do it here?
Yeah.
Did you ask them?
I think I saw the sign on the door.
Okay. Can I be a fly on the wall?
It's really, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, let's wax those pussies away. And, okay, Susie, so we're going to take a break.
A 24-hour break.
A 24-hour break. Thank you.
We'll be back in 24 hours.
We'll be back.
Right after this.
See you then.
Previously on Sam and Susie in the Morning.
There's something very...
Been listening to Sam and Susie in the Morning, which airs every weekday at 9 a.m. Pacific. To contact the show, please email your question or comment to sam@latalkradio.com or susie@latalkradio.com. A complete list of all past shows can be found on our archives page and on iTunes. For sponsorship or advertising information, email us at info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Susie in the Morning is a presentation of LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.